Welcome to No Filter Femme, the podcast where we have unfiltered, real conversations about the lives and livelihood of Black women over the age of 40. I am your co-host, Malia Arnett Archie.
And I'm Kelly Mason, your second co-host. Together, we're here to explore the joys and challenges of love, relationships, and intimacy after 40 with honesty, humor, and heart. On today's episode, grab your beverage, get comfy, and join us as we embark on this unapologetically bold and empowering journey. This is Rebel Love, No Filter Femme style. So we're going to mix it up a bit today. Okay. So in our last episode, we talked about rebel love, or just a rebellious look at what does the un-norm, if you will, look like, because it's a different consideration of romance and love after the age of 40. So we're going to mix it up just a bit today in this episode, and we're going to continue that conversation around redefining love and romance and what that looks like after the age of 40. However, we're going to do a no filter flash question edition today.
Woo, my favorite.
Yes. So we won't have the magic bowl this time that we're picking questions out of, but we do have questions that we're going to just kind of go back and forth on. We're going to throw them out and then provide our pontification about that particular question. Okay, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, question.
I think. Oh, no, I'm ready.
We're diving in. Okay, question number one. What's one thing you've learned about love that you wish you knew earlier? Oh. I know there's like probably 15, but.
One thing that I wish that I've learned about love that I wish I knew earlier. Is that I get to decide how I'm loved, by whom I'm loved, and the experience of love for myself.
Okay.
For a lot of years, I received love and allow love on other people's terms.
Okay.
And that's in every area, not just romantic love, but especially romantic love. We talked about it on one of our earlier episodes. And I think I was very candid about how childhood trauma impacted my love dar. meaning that I was looking to so badly to be affirmed in relationships that I became whatever version of me that the other person needed me to be in hopes that they would not leave me or abandon me. And it wasn't until fairly recently, really in my 40s, late 30s, early 40s, that I was sort of healed. It's a journey. And walking in healness, in healing and wholeness, to realize that I don't have to morph into anyone else other than me to be worthy and valuable enough to receive the love that I deserve.
That is really good, because I think so many of us become chameleons for a variety of reasons.
Yeah.
We do just that. And I often at times actually see it after marriage too, because we feel like we have to morph into what, however we defined in our instances, a wife to be, and we don't make our own definition of what that looks like.
Yeah.
You know how you and I have had conversations about when the woman is the primary breadwinner, and then helping your spouse understand what their value is, and then also being sensitive to societal norms and how you're really kind of bucking that, and all of those things, I think, kind of go along too with what you're saying. Is I love that you were able to define, no, this is my worth and value.
Yeah.
Outside of anybody else's definition, assumption, or morphing into what somebody thinks I should be, but this is how valuable I am.
Yeah, I mean, no, thanks for, you know, the question, first of all, because it does really require you to be introspective and think about all that you've lived through to get to where you are. And one thing that I will say for the people who are like, okay, well, that's great, but how? Like, how did you make that transition and how you are receiving and allowing love to be present in your life? And first I'm going to say, you know, for me, it's been a spiritual journey. It's been a journey that includes therapy. It's been a journey that includes a lot of action on my part to understand who I am, who I was created to be, and really define that value. I will say that had I not gotten really proactive about, you know, understanding, being sober to the fact that there was something wrong with how I was, you know, engaging in love. And again, in romantic relationships and familial relationships and, you know, friend relationships, all of that, I was still showing up in the same way.
Okay.
And, you know, morphing and becoming a chameleon to be affirmed and to be accepted and to, you know, lobby for love. Mm-hmm. So I would encourage you that if this is resonating with you and you're like, okay, I definitely see myself, you know, being a person that is doing this, I would say to you, you know, do the work of digging deeper to find out what might be driving that. Mm-hmm. And we have to stop trying to live past our need for healing and wholeness, mm-hmm. and investing in identifying what those sort of causal connections are for how you're showing up and receiving in love, and then doing something about it.
Yeah. I love that you said you leaned in on it.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes I feel like we are passengers instead of in the driver's seat.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you said, okay, I identify a pivot that needs to take place, but this is a lot of internal work.
Yeah.
Which is, we talked a lot of the internal work in the previous episode. Check that out if you haven't yet. But I love that you were able to say, okay, I've got a combination of a spiritual journey. I've got a combination of a therapeutic journey, and that it's a journey.
It is.
It is a journey with highs and lows, I would imagine, and all of the work that goes along with that, but then also the reward as well. Ooh, I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
So it's a journey that we'll keep taking.
Mm-hmm.
You ready?
I am ready.
Okay. How have your romantic priorities changed over the years?
In a couple of ways. I, for a long time, because I come from, you know, my mom and dad have been married over 50 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Over 50 years, still like each other, still, you know, have date nights regularly and all the things, right? I, for so many years, defined that, while that is beautiful, mm-hmm. for them, as my definition of what my romantic partnership should look like.
Yeah.
And while I think there are beautiful pieces of that that I have for sure gleaned from and incorporated into my marriage, I discovered that I needed to define that for me.
Mm-hmm.
So as I began to seek out partners and was actively dating, I feel like I was trying to be the replication of my mom and dad instead of being the evolution of my mom and dad.
Whoa.
You know what I mean? It's not that I'm throwing all of that I saw away.
Yeah.
And it's not that I'm embracing all of it. It's that there were beautiful pieces of it. And so what does the next evolution of that look like?
Yeah.
And that partnership where my father and mother have much more societally traditional gender roles that didn't necessarily work in my household.
Yeah.
So in our household, it is, okay, so Who's got time to do the laundry?
Yeah.
My husband does most of the grocery shopping. Like, I don't even know where the things are in the grocery store. And so we don't necessarily have the traditional societal roles. Mm-hmm. And so for me, my priorities changed by saying, this is what I really need. And this is what I really excel at within a relationship, and being comfortable with that. Because I think for the first couple of years, I felt like I wasn't, it was almost like I had this inner jihad, you know, just an internal struggle of trying to be my parents, but really not being true to me. And somewhere, and I don't even know if there was something specific, but somewhere in there, I decided within myself, no, I just need to be me.
Yeah.
Which it's okay that it should be an evolutionary process of, this is the next generation. The world is different.
Right.
The way we communicate is different. Our needs are different. We're two different individuals within inside of this relationship. So for me, my priorities changed because I moved me up in the priority list of what really works for me.
I love that. That's so good. Moving yourself up in the priority list of what love means for you.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to take that.
Okay.
That's a nugget. Because we deprioritize our own needs and love so often.
We do.
That we get lost. And before you know it, it's easy to look up and say, am I being fulfilled on any level? And why am I doing this? And to what end?
Yeah.
And then what do you do?
Yeah. Because now you're in it.
Yeah.
I mean, if you've gotten that far,
yeah,
where you're already all the way in it and asking that question. That's why I love what you said in the last episode about, if you're early on in the dating stage, like, do the internal questions then, because it will then chart your course and your path. Yeah. When you do it earlier on, it's not that you can't get out of things and, you know, change the situation and pivot once you're already in something, but it is much more difficult when you're in,
yep,
something and there's assets involved and children involved. It's a whole different ballgame.
Yes.
But I do, now reflecting on it, and I hadn't really thought about it until you asked the question, I do think that I shackled myself for a while,
mm-hmm,
because I wasn't this picture perfect replication of my parents, as opposed to, but my parents gave me some really great nuggets,
yeah,
and I could take those
build
nuggets
on it.
And build on it.
Yeah.
Exactly. I had to really let go of that, and I feel like I had a lot of peace.
Yeah.
Then.
And how much of all of that do you think also is a result of the pressure that as a Black woman we shoulder, and the burdens that we shoulder to sort of be all things to all people?
I think a lot of it. I think a lot of it, and there's a lot of pride that we as a people have. You know, growing up, it was like, you were the Johnsons, or you were the Smiths,
yeah,
or you were the Thomases, you know, and there was this brand, if you will, which having pride in how you carry yourself and having pride in how you interact with people, I think is good, but it can also be limiting,
yeah,
and shackling if there isn't any room for you to morph into or really embrace your own identity within,
yeah,
that. And I think some of that as Black, it goes into us being a Black woman as well, that we've got to be all things. So I need to look this image. I need to,
yeah,
look this part. I need to follow this mode and this example. But really the best way for me to be all things to other people is for me to be authentically me,
mm-hmm,
and truly be who I am, because maybe being who I am might inspire someone else to be who they are.
Yeah.
And the best version of themselves. And yeah, it might ruffle some feathers.
Right.
It might not work for other people. But at the end of the day, when my head hits the cool of the pillow, I have peace.
Yeah.
And I think as Black women, we shoulder, even in this space, as we've talked about in previous episodes, we shoulder so much of other people's expectations.
Yeah. I mean, people that are not even in your home.
Listen.
Or in your bedroom.
Okay.
I mean, just think about that.
Yeah.
Like, literally, you are crafting your love world based on people. And I'm talking about now from an intimacy perspective. People who are not actively involved or engaged in your...
But they have so much input.
But they have so much input and impact.
Yeah, man. And, you know, I will say that extends, and you mentioned this earlier, with familial relationships and friendships as well. If I shifted this question just a bit, how have my friendship priorities changed over the years? I really, in the past couple years, had to really just let some friends go.
Yeah.
I was hanging on to what used to be. I was hanging on to the good old days. I was hanging on to memories. And I feel like, to a certain extent, I was romanticizing this friendship and really not being honest that it had run its course.
Yeah.
And it's not to shame anyone else, nor to shame myself. It had just run its course. Yeah. And I do think... I know that I took great pride in saying, oh, I've known this person for 20-something years, because as a recovering people pleaser, then that helped my image to say I'm loyal. It shows that I'm loyal because I've had this friend for 20-something years, but this friendship had long since been over.
Yeah.
The effectiveness of the friendship had long since been over. And the connection was no longer healthy.
Yeah.
But again, being all things to all people and being this recovering people pleaser, I felt like, but I can't let the friendship go, because how is that going to look?
Yeah.
How is she going to respond?
Yeah.
But at the same time, again, lowering myself on the priority list. I'm not getting anything out of this friendship. And maybe she's not even getting anything out of it herself.
Yeah. I think, you know, thinking about it like a storage device on your computer, we don't have infinite space for relationships. We think that we do. But for the closest relationships and the most intimate relationships, there's a finite space and energy that you have to invest in those relationships. And I think when you don't reprioritize, deprioritize relationships, end relationships that need to end because, like you said, they're no longer effective or no longer serving sort of the purpose for you or the other person, not to, you know, cast blame on either side, but just to say, this relationship isn't relationshipping anymore. So it's time for us to move on. Why? Because I need to make space for the relationships that are for this season of my life, this part of my life, because there is a storage issue. And if I'm holding on for the sake of being able to say I have a friend, I've had a friend for 20 years, and that is no longer an effective relationship, am I now closing myself off to the possibilities of inviting new relationships in that are supposed to be mutually beneficial to me and this person that can't make them their way into my life romantically, familially, platonically, whatever it is? The person that is for me now can't even get in the door because I'm holding space for somebody that I need to cut ties with.
You just taught me a whole word.
What'd I say?
The analogy of the space and the storage.
Yeah.
That's such a great visual for me because I had never considered it that way. I was so focused on being loyal. And if I disconnected from this person, that was going to show that I was a disloyal person. And I hold loyalty so high.
Yeah.
But I never thought about it from that perspective of, but was I crowding out what was really going to be more beneficial to me and to someone else in that connection by holding on to this connection that was taking up a lot of storage?
A lot of storage space.
Ooh, that's good.
A lot of storage space. And, you know, when you hit 40, I think you start to be clear about, again, we talked about this earlier, how you're spending your energy and where mm-hmm. you're investing it. And for me especially, I am keenly aware because, you know, of all the balls I have in the air, you know, a wife, a mother, a business owner, you know, I have clients that are depending on me. And so every moment of every day, I have to make a decision about what I'm going to be doing and who I'm going to be doing it with. And a big part of that is the who. And, you know, relationships that are not reciprocal in returning the energy mm-hmm. that I'm giving, mm-hmm. no, those have to be deprioritized.
Yeah.
They have to be.
Yeah.
Because if all you're doing is taking, then that is cutting me off from being able to give the energy to in the other spaces that are important in my marriage,
yeah.
with my children, with, you know, the relationships that are mutually beneficial. And it's not that you give intending to receive, but you do deserve reciprocity.
Yes.
And that's okay to expect reciprocity. And as Black women, I think we have to get comfortable with that thinking.
Yeah, I agree.
It's not always giving to the expense of yourself, mm-hmm. at the expense of yourself.
And I think we do that across the board.
Across the board.
As we've talked about, and particularly in friendships, that makes me think, you know, when you were mentioned about the reciprocity and how this really should be mutually beneficial, when friendships have run their course, it can be an exhaustive exchange because the giving and the receiving can look different ways, right?
Yeah.
So when I got engaged, it didn't even cross my mind that my dearest friend wasn't going to be over the moon.
Yeah.
You know, but when the response was, okay, and that was the complete response, you know what I'm saying? There was like no excitement. There was no energy, you know? And so then it, and I'm saying this because it can look like different things. I think sometimes in our minds, we may think, well, it's not reciprocal and it looks like this one thing. But even if it's not reciprocal in that you're not excited for me, there's no energy, you know, coming this
yeah,
way.
Yeah, I'm not asking you to pay for the wedding.
No.
I'm just asking you to, you know, say, yay!
Yay! Put a
I'm
smile
so happy
on your
for you.
Face. You know what I'm saying? A congratulations. Jeez. I mean, just a little something. But it becomes an energy drain.
Yeah.
And I think that's what really resonates with me when you gave the visual, like that totally clicked with
yeah.
me. And I never thought of it that way. With that storage, just like in our phones, you can only store so many photos. You can only store so many videos. There's only
infinite.
So much media storage available.
And I think Black women need to recognize this, that when you start to take your growth journey seriously, you're going to leave some people behind.
That is so true.
Because you become a mirror,
mm-hmm.
right?
Ooh.
And so now we were here and we were both okay with being, but now I'm growing, I'm doing the work, I'm engaging in my own personal development and improving relationships. And you see yourself as a reflection when you look at me.
Yeah.
And now it's calling into question what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead of you taking the challenge to say, let me take some notes and let me, you know, follow suit because I like the growth that Kelly's making in her life. I like how she's improving in this area. If I don't want to change, mm-hmm. the alternative to that, it's easier for me to say, oh, she thinks she's better than me. So now she's, you know, she's getting married. So, mm-hmm. okay. So, you know, mm-hmm. the jealousy and envy, I mean, we just Ooh. Have to call it what it is.
Listen.
Starts to kick in when you become a mirror to people who were okay with you being here.
Yes.
But they are not going to be okay with you growing past them.
That is so true. Because I'm okay with this scenario. I have signed up with and agreed upon you being in this space in your life and me being in this space in my life. And not only may I not want to grow, I may feel like I can't grow.
Yeah.
I may feel like I am boxed into this situation that I have signed up for that I'm really not that happy with.
Yep.
but here I am, but I'm okay because we're both here and I have agreed to us both being here. But then, as you so pointedly put it, stated, then the mirror comes out.
Yeah.
It's like, well, now, wait a minute. We didn't agree that you were going to do something different or that you were going to do something more, that you were going to do something less. There was this understood, I didn't sign up for it, but I signed you up for it. Agreement of where we're going to be, you know, and now you're changing the dynamic.
Yep.
And that's a whole issue.
It is. It is. And, you know, when you sense that, I think when you're a loyal person, you sense it when that starts to happen. But again, you want to hang on to it because, you know, this is my sister friend.
Yes,
you know?
We've been through this together. We've been through this. That together.
And history is not enough.
It's not enough. And yes, you have been through those things together in history. And that was then.
Yeah.
And this is now.
Yeah.
And what I love also about what you said as far as making room for new friendships, new romantic, you know, interests, whatever that new coworker, you know, whatever that new may look like. What I love about that is perhaps then as we evolve and grow and we're not always looking back at the history of things, these new people coming into our lives will then perhaps challenge us to go even further. And so there's an agreement there perhaps of us both learning. And perhaps then, as you were mentioning, that person is able to say, huh, you know, I hadn't considered that thing that she's doing, but I kind of did that. What does that look like in my life?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I do agree that, I mean, I was holding on for dear life, child. Holding on for dear life.
Oh, I get it.
And not realizing that it's okay to let it go.
It's okay to let it go.
Yeah. And I feel like once I crossed over the age of early 40s, definitely probably more 42, 43, I began to just be okay.
Mm-hmm.
With letting people, my father in love says this so beautifully. He says, you know, baby girl, you have to allow people to choose what they're choosing.
Oh.
And so much wisdom in that. And he's such a wise, wise man. But when he said it, he just said it and we just sat on the phone with it. I was like, you know what? I have to allow, there's a freedom and a release and a peace. And I am allowing you to choose what you're choosing.
Yeah.
The extended version of that then is, but I don't have to stay here for it.
Mm.
So I'm going to allow that because that's what you're choosing.
It's beautiful.
And I'm not going to go against your will.
Yeah.
I'm not going to topple over or force your will. But that doesn't mean that I have to stay here.
In fact, my growth might require me to move on.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Or I won't grow.
Yeah.
I love that you said require because it is a requirement.
Well, you know, I love the analogy of pruning. You know, when you cut your plants back and, you know, when you first look at it, after you cut all the dead things, parts, the leaves, branches off, and it looks a little measly and a little lonely.
Yeah.
And then you come back next week and, you know, it's beautiful and grown and green and lush. But you had to get the dead parts off first.
Yeah.
Right? Because the dead parts were sucking the life out of the living parts.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens, I think, when we hang on to relationships that we are supposed to cut. Is it starts to suck the life out of the living parts of us. I think I might have used this analogy before. But, you know, growth requires pruning.
Yeah.
And pruning does not always feel good when you're the one, you know, getting cut with the shears.
No. No.
But it's good for you.
Yeah.
And that is like really trusting the process.
It is.
Is that, you know, again, I'm cutting off the relationships that are sucking my energy, my life source. But I can fully expect that is also me making room for new blooms.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Because I don't think we realize, particularly if using that same scenario or same analogy, I don't think we particularly realize if we're looking at a plant and 75% of it is green, or maybe even 85% of it is green and 15% of it has some dead parts. We're like, oh, but it's overwhelmingly green, you know, it shouldn't really have an impact. But if we leave them there over time, it's no longer an 85-15 split. Mm-mm. Then it's a 65-35 split.
That's how that works.
And then it tips all the way to that. It's now a 10-90 split. So I love that scenario.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. So I want to go back because I didn't ask you the question you asked me.
Okay.
About the one thing you've learned about love that you wish you knew earlier.
One thing about that I've learned about love that I wish I knew earlier. That I was, I don't want to say able, that I was worthy of care. Mm.
Yeah.
Not that protection and provision from a financial or from a very physical, visceral perspective aren't important. But I don't know that I really knew that I deserved and was worthy of care. Mm. Of somebody caring about the smallest things in my mind.
Yeah.
You know, I had mentioned to my husband, I was like, you know, I wanted to do kind of like an elevated casual. I want to kind of change my travel attire. And I just mentioned it in passing. And two boxes of shoes show up. One sparkly pair of black. And I mentioned I wanted some time ago, some black sneakers. Sparkly pair of black sneakers and one non-sparkly, so I had options to choose from. He's like, I know you mentioned, like, you wanted to kind of do an elevated casual, but still comfortable, you know,
come
as you travel.
On,
you know,
so husband.
Right? So it's just the thoughtfulness. It's the consideration. Mm-hmm. It's the, I have your Starbucks order saved as a favorite in my app. And I was on the way home and I saw these flowers just because it's a random Tuesday. Yeah. You know, just the care and consideration. And it's so much what I really, really want for so many Black women, in particular Black women over 40, because a lot of us have raised children. We have raised godchildren, nieces, nephews. We have had good experiences in love. We have had some really bad experiences in love. We have been in the entrepreneurial space, the corporate space. We have given, you know, which is, we've talked about that a lot. We've given so much of ourselves that although I'm not a huge fan of the soft girl era term, I am a huge fan of the definition of it.
Yeah.
And I feel like as Black women over 40, we've really put in our time.
Yeah.
We've put in a lot of work and effort, and I want us to experience care.
Yeah.
And I would say that's the one thing I've learned about love that I wish I knew earlier, that I deserve it.
Yeah.
And that I'm worthy of it.
And what do you say to the Black woman, because this soft girl era thing, like you said, there's two sides of the coin. Because I can hear a sister over 40 saying, well, that's just not reality for me, right? Like, who's gonna watch the kids? Who's gonna pay the mortgage? Who's gonna make the car pay? Like, you know, like the things that I'm doing, I cannot get off my plate. And so I'm not afforded the opportunity to live a softer life. And then there's, you know, women who are likely saying, I don't know if I want that. Mm-hmm. Like, I like being all things and in control. What do you think about that?
That's why I have a challenge.
Yeah.
For a few reasons. But why I have a challenge with the soft girl era, because it tends to be, number one, it tends to be more of an aesthetic. There's an aesthetic, and I could go on my soapbox for a minute about this, but I think sometimes, not all the time, that aesthetic isn't necessarily aligned with us as a people.
Yeah.
I love a monochromatic beige, French manicured, perfectly hair coiffed,
yeah,
nude lipstick situation.
Yes.
Like the next girl.
Yep, yep.
I think that it is part of a definition of what a quote unquote soft girl aesthetic would look like. A soft girl aesthetic, to me, that's why I said I like the definition and not necessarily the term. I like the definition of what is comfortable and restful and easing to me.
Mm-hmm.
That may be a pink lip.
Mm-hmm.
That may be Ruby Woo, like we were talking yeah. about yesterday. Whatever that is that just brings you joy.
Yeah.
And that may be bold colors, but it brings you joy. But I hear you also from the perspective of how do I make that happen? Because it is me. I don't have a mate, or that even if I have a mate, I still don't have the option because that's just not the dynamic that we have.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, that sounds great and all, but how do I make that as a reality? I'll address that. And also at the same time, another thing that another portion that I have had a conversation with my girlfriends with, and I think this is what you had also mentioned. What if that's just not my thing?
Yeah.
That's that aesthetic, if you will, is not my thing. And that's part of the reason why I feel like soft girl, generally speaking, is a very rigid, conservatively defined definition.
Yeah.
I prefer that we have an era of rest and ease.
Mm.
And so that may look like, I remember doing this video about ease. And in this particular instance, we do have a bathtub in our home. And I know everybody doesn't have a bathtub in their home, but you could do this in the shower. You could do a price line, name your price for like a weekend where they have a bathtub in that room. Like I would do that sometimes. And I went to the Dollar Tree and got some bubble bath, got some bath salts for, because, you know, we over 40, so it's a different conversation. It ain't just about luxuriating. I need some function in
this
luxury.
That's it, right. Help these bones and these muscles.
Yes, and I got some flowers from the Dollar Tree and created an environment, and candles. So I think maybe I spent $20 for some flowers, some bubble baths, some bath salts, and some candles, and created an environment and a space just for me.
Mm-hmm.
That may look like, back to the 10-minute challenge, that may look like if you've got kids running around the house or you just don't feel like you have time available, that may look like setting the tone in the house of, okay, these 20 minutes
are mine.
Make sure the kids are fed, everybody's bathed, everybody got what they need, or they fend for themselves. Figure that thing out. Just make sure everybody's still breathing.
I promise they're not going to die.
They're not going to die. But these 20 minutes are my rest and ease.
Yeah.
And the second part of that is I've talked with a girlfriend in particular of mine who is a corporate executive. And she's like, you know, that aesthetic just isn't really me. I enjoy the corporate life that I have. I enjoy the leadership role that I operate in and function in. And so she finds her rest and ease in other ways that doesn't necessarily fit the soft girl aesthetic, but her soft girl aesthetic may be shopping,
right?
Going to Chicago for a weekend, strolling down Michigan Avenue. That's her rest and ease. So what I prefer is a life of rest and ease for what that looks like for you.
For you.
And it doesn't have to be this very rigid, monochromatic, very muted. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I just mean muted in colors.
Yeah.
Look, it's really more of an internal way of care. And that may look like if someone has the financial means to have someone come in and clean the house. So you just sit on the sofa. And you drink your coffee or you drink your tea, and that's your care moment.
Yeah.
But finding ways even to be creative that don't necessarily require any or a lot of money, but it's very true and indicative to you.
Yeah. What I hear you saying is it's acknowledging that you have needs and then allowing those needs to be fulfilled by your partner, you know, by yourself, but not sort of glossing over the fact that you are deserving of fulfillment,
yeah,
and care and space. And so I think you're right in that I have to define what that looks like for me, mm-hmm, and not necessarily take all these social cues that are telling me that soft girl era means that I am sitting in a fluffy beige room and, you know, I have people waiting on me hand and foot, because that might just not be my reality. But my reality is I can let my guard down a little bit, especially in romantic relationships, and say, listen, I need this and I'm going to let you handle it. Because I can speak personally for me. I'm the type of person and have been that if I ask you once and you don't get it right, it's easier for me to do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so when I think of soft girl era for myself, it's Malia, relax and let somebody else do it and let somebody else take care of it.
Yeah.
And if it's not perfect, let, you know, be okay, because that's, you know, people are taking things off of your plate and it might look a little different than how you envisioned it, but you are deserving of help.
Yeah.
Of help, and especially for my husband, because and I think this is probably true in a lot of marriages, that we get frustrated, mm-hmm, because we feel like we don't have the help in certain areas, and we feel like I can't be soft because I'm always the one having to think, I'm always the one have to figure out, you know, how the bills are getting, and I don't mean like paying the bills, but like literally like writing them out or whatever it is, and I'm picking the kids up, and I'm soccer mom, and I may still be working, and you know, and but have you asked for exactly what you need?
Yeah.
And then have you relinquished control of it?
Mm-hmm.
And are become okay with the person responding to that in the way that they have interpreted it, mm-hmm, even if it's not the way you saw it, but it's help, it's care,
yeah,
it's trying.
Yeah.
And so for me, that's my challenge, my personal challenge is asking for the help, being clear about what I need, and then letting it go.
Yeah. And maybe the help doesn't come, and this is me talking to me, maybe the help doesn't come in that way. Now, I would have preferred that you, of these five things that I need done, I would prefer that you do this one, and I can take care of these other ones, or these two, and I can take care of these three. But maybe those two really aren't their strength.
Mm.
Maybe the strength really is this one and that one over there, which still takes something off of my plate. I would prefer that it be these two.
Yeah.
But if you can knock that out the park, hey, it's two things down,
yeah,
instead of one thing down. And so I think you make a great point in being able to have an open mind and a open heart, because I think a lot of us that are very driven, I can totally resonate with what you're saying. It's like, I really could just knock this out. I know I can just get this done. I don't really feel like asking because I can just knock it out myself, as opposed to, but it is one less thing that I have to get done.
Yeah. Yeah. And then not complaining about the care and the help when you get in. I'm talking to myself now, because my husband, he does all the cooking. Because he enjoys it,
yeah,
right? He's good at it. He enjoys it. He's a country boy, and he likes to be in the kitchen. But you know, there's sometimes that he may, you know, make a meal that I'm like, I would rather have something else. And for a long time, I would express that. It's like, no, I'm good. You know, I really don't. And I would kind of see the disappointment because, you know, in his way of showing up and helping take things off my plate and helping to care for me, like that's one of the ways that he shows love and he shows care and affection.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and again, it's a balance, because you do need to be clear about, you know, what you like and what you don't like. But also, I think being sensitive to help when it arrives.
Yeah.
And, you know, not running your help off. Because
yeah.
I think we do that. We do that. And it's like gratitude is important.
Yeah.
I think in getting to a place where whatever your definition of a soft woman girl life is, it's gratitude for the things that are coming into your life that make your life a little easier.
Yes.
To live.
Yes. Which could be a very broad definition.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. I could go on the soft girl era soapbox for a while.
Yeah.
Just because I think the intent, and that's what I was saying, I like the definition. I think the intent was... I think the intent can be very good in that it opens up the conversation for particularly a group of women who are seen as aggressive and strong and they can handle everything. Our ancestors were the same way. Our grandmothers were the same way. They can handle everything. We can, but it doesn't mean we want to. And it doesn't mean that we have to. Yeah, we can. But we also deserve the ability to be able to just be.
Yeah, and stop romanticizing the struggle.
Oof.
You know, it's, I think... we over time have become so comfortable with my life as a Black woman has to be hard, right?
Yeah.
Like that's kind of my job. That's my role to just take it and to take what is thrown my way to, you know, make Thanksgiving dinner out of the leftovers from, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like I'm going to make make something beautiful out of something that's been very ugly. We're good at it.
Yeah.
And I think over time it's almost been, you know, again, us romanticizing that because who else am I if I don't have that? If I'm not fixing everybody else's problems.
Yes.
If I'm not taking it all on. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean that you don't lead. In areas, I love the example that you gave about your friend that is a corporate exec and that enjoys like all of the stress. Because if you don't know, it's not without stress. It's not without challenges. It's not without, but you know, that's where I find I get my energy and my strength and my identity, and I love it.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it, and that's great. But then also making room to get what you need in the way that works for you.
Yes.
In that I'm not looking for struggle in every area of my life. I'm understanding I'm going to have some.
Yes.
But I don't need every area of my life to be a fight all the time.
Nor is that productive or healthy.
Man, I'm tired.
Yes. And if there's a better or different way to do it, like it made me think about when you were just talking about Thanksgiving dinner. I remember when I first moved to North Carolina, I had just started my job, so I hadn't accrued a lot of time away and time off. So I needed to stay there for Thanksgiving and not travel like I normally would. Honey, let me tell you something that blessed my entire life. I discovered, and maybe other people know this, this is just new information to me, that restaurants have Thanksgiving Day dinners. And so they have a separate Thanksgiving Day menu and meal. And I said, well, I'll be John Brown. You mean to tell me I'll make a reservation? I go to the restaurant. I have, you know, some version of a traditional or non-traditional, if I decide to, Thanksgiving meal. I did this 2 years in a row, actually. I think 2 years in a row. And I eat the meal. I have some leftovers. And I leave.
And they're going to clean it up.
They're going to clean the dishes. They're going to clean up, you know, the table, you know, for whoever's coming after me. And I said, now this is God.
Yeah.
Instead of days before preparing all the meal, buying all the food, standing for hours and hours cooking all the food and then setting the table and then the cleanup after all, especially if you have a larger family.
Yeah.
All of the cleanup. I was like, this just makes perfect sense to me. So to me, that is a rest and an ease moment. Like, let's just go and let someone else cook the meal, you know, decide which cuisine and, you know, which type of food that, you know, that we're looking for, get some leftovers, go home.
And rest.
And, but it made me think about that when you were just mentioning Thanksgiving and how we sometimes, I think, just need to open our mind to something different.
Something different. Something new.
Yeah.
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 Mm. Good.
Okay. I'm asking you.
Okay.
How do you keep intimacy alive during the sandwich year? So we're describing the sandwich years as, which is what our age range is typically in. You may still be caring for parents, and you may still have an 18-year-old and a 4-year-old, for example.
I would get this question. I would.
And I think even if the children are older, let's say you've got 20-something-year-olds, yeah, and they're still, you know, the frontal, you know, part of their brain is still forming, and they make these decisions like, what were you thinking? So you've got that, you know, kind of stress, if you will, where you've shifted from a parent to a counselor, mm-hmm, in their lives, as you were speaking about in a couple episodes ago about being parent of an adult child. But then you have your parents, you know, like particularly with our baby boomers, you know, it's like, yeah, I was trying to figure out how to do a screenshot. How do you do a screenshot? And then the people call me and they said that if I gave them this information, that they were going to give me that. No, why did you give them your personal information? Mm. Well, they said that this was the IRS call, or, you know, whatever. Okay, so how do you keep intimacy alive during the sandwich years?
There's been a few times in our conversations where I've had to just have very honest moments.
Okay.
I am trying to figure this out.
Okay. That's honest.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Right? I have a 4-year-old, an 18-year-old that just graduated from high school, headed to college. I have a boomer mom, mm-hmm, who is doing all the things.
All the things
that boomers do. Bless her love. And I love, and she lives close by. So I'm the child that's here and available to help. And it's been difficult.
Okay.
It has been, and, you know, going into menopause.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm looking at myself in the mirror every day like, do I know you? Are you?
Who's that girl?
Who? How you? Right? And so I'm really, really, really just working through this.
Okay.
But I will say at the start of it, of this journey of really defining what intimacy and preserving intimacy and making sure that it's present in my relationship is a conversation about how I'm feeling.
Okay.
Like, and what I don't know about myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the stage that I'm in with my husband is like, listen, I don't have the same desires that I had before. The things that used to work, maybe they're not working anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm tired.
Mm-hmm.
I am overwhelmed with, you know, chasing a toddler and an 18-year-old and my mother, right? And so I'll go back to what I said about, you know, being sober to where you are on your journey.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think I've been here for a while.
Okay.
And I really just thought I was probably losing my mind.
Mm.
Like, you know, like, oh my gosh, like what is happening to me? Like I'm feeling pressure in ways that I hadn't felt pressure and out of control. In a lot of ways that I hadn't felt out of control in before. But I was just powering through.
Okay.
Just getting it done. Yeah. Just showing up, right? Mm-hmm. Leaving everything on the table. And I thought that would be successful. I would be successful in doing that if I just kept hammering it. You know, if you need, okay, we'll make it work. And people would even say, I don't know how you do it all. And it's almost a badge of honor. Like, girl, I don't know either, but I'm doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm realizing, girl, no, you cannot.
Yes.
You cannot.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot continue at this pace and not have conversations with the person that you lay next to every night about how you're feeling.
Yeah.
About what you're lacking.
Mm-hmm.
About the changes in your physical body, your desires, your emotions, your hormones, the stress of being a mother, of being an entrepreneur, of being a daughter. And so for me, this is the first step of, you know, sort of figuring it out, is being honest about what I don't know.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
Yeah. I love the honesty, though, because I don't think particularly, because, again, we're problem solvers and we're fixers. So the I don't know full stop almost feels like a failure.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
It's like I don't have a solution.
Yeah.
I don't have an option of where I go from here because, again, it's I don't know, full stop. It's not I don't know, but it's I don't know.
Yeah.
And I actually think my therapist would say, you know, where on the emotion chart, what are the emotions that are connected to that thought?
Yeah.
Or connected to that sense of feeling like I just don't have a solution.
Yeah.
And I don't know where to go. And I think being able to sit with our thoughts.